And with the lovely notes of Robert Plant, welcome to 11 Pieces of Me. Anyone who listened to the pod last week will understand that this is not a pod full of the guests' all-time best 11, but a team made up of the guests' all-time favourite 11 players, which is quite important to state because how in God's name could anyone have David Beckham in their best 11? Joining myself this evening to co-host this extraordinary pod is a lad who is not only articulate, intelligent, but he also has a PhD. This lad is equally articulate and also intelligent. It's the main man, the sidekick, the Alfred to my Batman, the Debbie McGee to my Paul Daniels. It's Pinky to my brain. It's Ali Thompson. Welcome, Chief.
Good evening, Gav. How are we? That was an impressive opening. You wrote that all day today.
I spent all day doing that, Chief.
Good to see the work wasn't wasted then.
I said he wasn't. I'll tell you, let's introduce our guest this week, who's none other than the brain behind the excellent football grad pods. It's Manuel Vitt.
Yeah, that was actually pretty good. We discussed my name before the pod. I didn't think you would actually pull it off, but yeah, not bad. How are you doing?
We're doing great, man. Absolutely brilliant. Man, we've got to start very simply. What team do you support?
So, I support 1860 Munich. Always have. Made a big mistake when I was a kid. You know, I grew up in Munich in Germany, and I made a big mistake when I was a kid, and I asked my dad, "Dad, what's your favorite team?" And he said, "I'm an 1860 supporter." So I come from a city that has one of the three best teams in the world, and I get to support the other team.
Who are currently in Bundesliga 2 at the moment, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, struggling in Bundesliga 2. We're one of the few teams in German football. We have an investor or owner, you know, depending on how you want to twist and turn it. And we're supposed to have a ton of money. We're supposed to become the next noisy neighbor. Yeah, this is for Manchester United fans. They didn't know what I'm talking about. But we're always 1860, so it's probably never going to happen.
Well, that's a shame. Look, man, give us your formation to your all-time 11 first.
So I've been playing around with this a little bit, and I'm going with a 3-4-3 simply because I don't like defenders. I think they're kind of boring. And midfielders, you know, there's so many midfielders. You know, I could have easily made two formations, but you know, that's just how it is. I had to stick with 11, and so 3-4-3 it is. And I did find actually it's only 2.5 to be honest with you, but I did actually find 2.5 defenders that I kind of like.
And you thought you were attacking Gav as well, eh?
And we'd have to see. We have to see what the lineup is, though. We have to see what the lineup.
That's true. Right, Manu, let's start. Who's your goalkeeper?
So, I know I'm an 1860 fan, and it was really difficult. You know, we have a list of few very legendary keepers. We have to go all the way back to Peter Radenkovic, and I never actually saw him play, so I didn't want to choose him. So I went to the German national team and to the unnamed club that's also playing in my home city. I chose Oliver Kahn, who I believe is probably the most legendary keeper of his generation. I know there is a guy who played in England, Danish keeper, that a lot of English people really like, but you know, I've never really seen anything special from him. So Oliver Kahn it is. He's of course known for his antics in the Bundesliga, biting someone's ear off, for example, the karate kick against Stefan Chapuisat. At one point, he strangled his own defender, Andy Herzog, during a Bayern Munich game. So this is the kind of keeper that I think, having played as a keeper myself, I always aspire to him. I had many moments where I wanted to strangle my own defense. So, you know, Oliver Kahn it is.
What do you reckon of that, Ali?
Yeah, he's a great. I didn't know about all those exploits. That makes me like him even more.
Oh, yeah. You'll go on YouTube. There's a best of just his like insane moments. Let's call it that. There's also a 5-minute long compilation just of his saves. And there were many good ones. But just try to find his moments where he kind of lost it a little bit. It's also a great one where he got hit by a golf ball during a game in Freiburg. And he continued this game, you know, being completely stitched up. So, yeah, he's a tough one.
Yeah, I remember certain moments. Last week, I had Santiago Canizares as my goalkeeper, and I think it was the 2001 Champions League final where, for the second year in a row, Valencia, that brilliant Valencia team, had lost. And the first thing that Oliver Kahn did when the final whistle went was to actually console Canizares, which was a lovely moment to see, because he was always he's always perceived to be this, let's be honest about it, a psychopath in goal. He did show a quite humble side to him by basically showing emotion and compassion to his opponent in defeat. So, Manu, that's a, no one can argue with that.
No, definitely not. And we both know who it is, so that's a great start.
Yeah, it's going to get more difficult after that. But yeah, I think Ollie Kahn is definitely one that I, and a lot of people recognize. Maybe a moment for me that I want to just add is that 2002 World Cup, where we sent possibly one of the worst, it is the worst team that we've ever sent to a tournament. And we still finished second. And that was all because of him. You know, he carried a team of not very good players to the final, you know, and almost won the thing, which would have been, of course, remarkable if he hadn't had played the final with a broken finger. You know, he would have maybe pulled it off, and we would be now talking of, you know, the equivalent of Chelsea winning the Champions League, maybe in World Cup history. You know, that those exploits alone, that's a very fond memory I have of him as well.
Well, Manu, well, give us your first defender.
Okay, so my defenders. I start with Thomas Müller. He is an 1860 defender. And, you know, it's almost a different era. He played for 1860 between 1989 and 1997. He played 213 games. He joined the club actually when 1860 was, in the third division. And he was part of the team that this was the first time in German history, actually. A club went from the third division to the second division to the first division. And this was in 1993, 1994, 1995. And, you know, a historic moment for my team, and a historic moment in German football. And Thomas Müller he wasn't the tallest, most scariest looking defender. In fact, when you look him up, he has like this beard and he looks like from a different era. And, but he was ruthless, absolutely ruthless. You know, I think there's actually some 1860 fan again put out compilation, and he just absolutely destroyed everyone who went past him. And, you know, we're talking about an era that's so different in football, isn't it? You know, when you look at the 1990s and in the late 1980s, it's such a different time in terms of defending. You know, the two-footed challenge tackle was actually just something that was commonly allowed. Like, you don't have anything like you have today, you know, where anything that kind of like simply looks like a little bit of a foul would be right away like give him a red card. So so he's my number one choice in defense.
Is he a captain?
No, he's not. My captain is going to be later down the list.
Grant.
Well, as expected, that's the first one on the list I've never heard of, but I'm definitely going to have a look. I brought him up there on Google, so I'll read more of him as well.
Ali, he plays for Bayern Munich up front these days.
Is it the same one?
No, it's definitely not the same guy.
I didn't think so. It's Müller, isn't it? It's not Müller.
Yeah, it's Müller, not Müller. Yeah. It's actually in English, the English pronunciation, English spelling for the last name, which is odd, isn't it?
No, that's what I thought when I brought it up there. Gav's just a dick. So who's your next defender, Manu?
So next I go with Bernhard Drares, probably someone you guys also haven't heard of. He was the libero, which is, of course, a position. Should we explain what a libero is? Because I don't think a lot of listeners lived in the era of the libero. You know, they were the guys that kind of just stood around behind the two center backs and didn't do much. Is that an accurate description of a libero? You know, just kind of being lazy and picking up the pieces.
Wasn't Beckenbauer the most famous libero? Didn't he create the position?
He did, didn't he? You know, so that's maybe a little bit of a bad example. Lazy doesn't describe it that well. Baresi, of course, is another one, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Franco Baresi. So there were some good liberals. I mean, we're talking about a different era, right? Manuel Neuer today runs more than most defenders did back then. So it's like a completely different era. But yeah, Bernhard Drares, he's my choice for libero simply because he was also part of that team that came up from the third division to the Bundesliga. And he, you know, he sort of was like the 90s were a very good time. The late 90s were a very good time for 1860 because that was a time when they actually came close to Champions League football at some point. Seems to be very far away now when you think about it. So, you know, he's my choice, and he's also my choice because he's very uncompromising I think at one point he picked up the record for the fastest red cards in Bundesliga history. I think he got 4 in his first season alone. So, you know, it's also kind of, you know, 1860 is the workers' team and we expect working class football from them. And Bernard Dries gave that to us week in and week out.
Andy, Ali.
Yeah, get the name right, buddy.
Yes, yeah, here's your job. Spell his second name.
Yeah, pass. I struggle with my own second name, Gav.
Bernard Dries, Dries.
Wow.
I don't know, Manu, am I right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Gav's going to be living off this for weeks now.
Don't worry, it's going to get worse.
Well, go on, Manu, hit us with your last defender.
So my last defender is an Austrian by the name of Harald Czerny. You know, and this is where I said, you know, remember before we started this pod, technically my last defender isn't a defender. He was actually more of a wing back or right midfielder and, you know, defensive right back kind of guy. Very fast, played for 1860. He's actually from Bayern Munich's academy, but he came over to 1860. We forgave him. He holds the record for the most games played for 1860. We have 263 games. He was also known for his almost ruthless runs on the right side. At the same time, being also very unproductive. You know, that's back then, you know, he was the guy who would always manage to get to the byline and always cross. And I think there was a record. I think in one game he had 34 crosses and not a single one resulted into a goal, which, you know, it's maybe a little bit of a weakness if you're right back. But, you know, if you play 263 games on that level and at 1860, which is a challenge in itself because it's a club that really burns its players, I think, you know, it's hard to leave him out of my my 11 simply because supporting a team like 1860 and then, you know, the guy, he was there from 1995 to 2007. That's 12 years. And I'm only 32, so that's a big chunk of my life. So I had to put him in.
Oh, yeah, what a player he was. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, a little bit like David Beckham, I guess.
Oh, getting digs in early. I love it.
Oh, that's brilliant. Brilliant.
Well, you know, I envisioned David. I didn't see much of David Beckham. Like, the only thing I ever saw of David Beckham is when he threw up at the side of the pitch. I think it was a 1998 World Cup. Or was it 2002? Anyways, when he played for Real Madrid, and I thought, whew, just like Harald. You know, lots of running, very little result. But, you know, so maybe a little bit comparable.
Fair enough. Is he our captain?
No. My captain still is later down the list.
Great.
Gav gets obsessed with this captain bit. Right, Manu. Who's, let's go with your left midfielder.
Yeah, so my left midfielder is Polish midfielder, Piotr Nowak. He joined 1860 in 1995, and he was a magician, absolutely brilliant player. He then went on to a glorious career in the MLS at the Chicago Fire. I think he was the coach there at some point as well. But he was absolutely magnificent, and he had such a great year in 1995 and then onwards from 1998 that he actually became the first player in 1860 history to earn 1 million Deutschmark. Do we need to explain what Deutschmark is to our listeners? So that's the unit of exchange that was later replaced by the Euro in Germany. So yeah, he was the first player to make a million Deutschmark at 1860, which caused a lot of controversy. I mean, when we talk about salaries today, that seems kind of crazy. It caused a lot of controversy because 1860 always had a policy of not paying a single player more than a million Deutschmark at the time. Because it was that working class history of the club and they wanted to always stay close to the people. So, you know, it was a bit of an outcry at the time.
That's interesting. So, Pato Nowak.
Yeah, Polish midfielder. Had a bit of a scandal, I think, at one of the teams he coached in the United States. I can't remember which one. Maybe Philadelphia Union. But yeah, he's definitely... I have fond memories of him because he was an absolute magician. Beautiful to watch. You know, of course, football has changed. Nowadays, he would probably struggle because he would have to run. But It seems like in the 1990s that was not necessary.
Well, so far we've had quite a few 1860 Munich players. So a personal question to you, Manu, did you have any access to any other leagues when you were growing up?
Not much. I mean, it's not like today. You know, nowadays I can turn on the television and I can watch whatever I want, right? I mean, that's true for us, all of us. But when I was a kid, we heard of Serie A, we heard of Premier League, you know, the magazines would write about some of the players playing there, but you didn't really care that much about it. Nowadays, I, you know, my work with Football Grad, that I work a lot in Russia. That would have been crazy back then. You know, you maybe would see Spartak Moscow come to town every once in a while in the Champions League. You would never, ever be able to watch the Russian league. That didn't really come until the 2000s. So when I was in my teens, late teens, and, you know, and then, as of course, now working in football, I can watch pretty much whatever. But back then, no, you know, I watched 1860. I went to the game every week. We had season tickets. You know, that was the team I watched. There wasn't anything else.
That's fair enough. Well, Manu, what about one of your center mids?
Yeah, so I go with Abidi Pelé, who had a short stint with 1860. But he was, of course, his best time was with Olympique Marseille, where he won the Champions League, pretty controversial Champions League victory too. Wasn't it? Because there was a lot of allegations of match fixing, and I think at some point the title was even taken away from them. But he was part of that squad, and he won the African Footballer of the Year three times. And he was, I remember when 1860 brought him in 1996, he was the first world star. And it was actually when he arrived at Munich's airport, a lot of people thought he would be signing for Bayern Munich. That's the kind of caliber of player he was. And it changed the culture of the team a little bit, because all of a sudden, you know, 1860 was able to land players that previously were out of reach for them. And I was fortunate enough to see him play live several times in the stadium. And he was an amazing player, a lot of fun to watch, very gifted. He didn't play a lot during the 2 years, only 50 games. But still, you know, I feel very fortunate that I was able to see him in stadium, which is personally, I think, you know, if you really want to see the quality of a player on television, you see a certain amount of it, but it's the work off the ball that you see, right? And that you only see in the stadium. And that's, he was second to none in that category. Of course, since then I've seen other players that were better, but at the time as a kid, he was just a different magnitude. And coming to a club, you know, that didn't have that kind of experience with world-class players, he just stood out.
Cool, he'll have to be checked out for sure.
Yeah, definitely. As you say, it is so much better watching a player in person than on TV, just to notice all the work that they actually do.
Yeah, you've more of an appreciation for the players.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I assume you guys are frequently going to stadiums, right? It's the entire thing is just different. You can see the things that defenders do, and you know, the way the formations change, especially if you have to view over the entire pitch. So that's why I always say, if you don't, yes, watching football from home on a television is great, but you know, it's that stadium experience that's so important. And maybe a bit off topic, but that's why I think it's so important that kids can go, because they're going to see things there that you don't see anywhere else.
Oh, yeah, 100% on that. Yeah, definitely.
I'll tell you a prime example, Manu, just to stay off topic for a minute or so, is if anyone has ever actually seen Lionel Messi play in a stadium, you will see for 70% of the time he is standing still. Whereas when you watch him on telly, you're constantly seeing the replays with his bursts, running around, seems like he's endless, endless energy. But the reality of it is, he really is standing around for most of the game, watching the game, reading the game, and it gives you more an appreciation for the type of player he actually is. He's an incredibly intelligent player.
Yeah, and another guy was like that. I mean, I've seen Lionel Messi live, but another guy was like that is Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who I have a lot of appreciation for too. And he would have made that list if he was retired. I see him in a few times live at Bayern Munich games, because I get access to all their games when I'm in Munich. And he doesn't move all the time either. And you would almost think he's lazy. Of course, you know better than that, because he only needs that one moment and that makes all the difference, right? But he does a lot of that too. And I think there is a lot to be said about that, right? This aimless running around doesn't really seem to suit the really smart, gifted players.
Exactly.
And to make that difference, to be just at the right time, at the right place. And you see that. you know, to give you another example, a lot of people always ask me why Bayern Munich were as good as they were under Pep Guardiola. And I said to them, go to the stadium and watch them. Just watch the shape of way how they play. Look at the formation and the way it changes during the game. And you can't see that on television because it always follows the ball. But when you see it on the pitch and you just watch it, it becomes very quickly apparent why they were as good as they are. And I mean, to some extent, still are. And you don't only see that when you actually watch it in a stadium. This is the same when you want to see why a team is struggling. Go to the stadium and just watch the shape of the formation. And it make all of a sudden a lot of things to come clear quite quickly. It's also the way players communicate with each other, etc., right? That's all off television. You don't see that on TV.
Completely agree. Completely.
Unless you go and watch Liverpool live, where it is like you're watching on TV.
Now, is that positive or negative?
Oh, geez, take it which way you want.
Yeah, I'm not even biting into the Liverpool jibes. I'm leaving them to it.
You know, I better don't say anything about Liverpool. Those who have listened to my previous podcast know why.
So, yeah. You and your Daniel Sturridge talk. But let's move on from that before that gets... Who's your next centre midfielder, Manu?
So my next one is Thomas Hessler, who you probably
heard. Yes, we know him. We know him.
Thomas Hessler. Do you know that he actually also had a big stint at 1860 towards his end of his career? Actually, you know, after made it back to the national team for the 2000 European Championships, which were, of course, a disaster for the country, but we'll leave that part out. Yeah, he's magnificent. You know, great time at Roma, Juventus Turin, Karlsruhe, short stint at Borussia Dortmund before playing 115 games for 1860. And that's where I really got to see him quite a bit, of course, which brings us back to our former topic. But Thomas Hessler, or Ike Hessler, because he's from Berlin, what a great player he was. It's very smart, very short. You know, there's a joke in Germany. Why can you not lock Ike Hessler into a room because he can't reach door handle? Ha ha ha! Very funny, but you know, so much fun to watch. And there's a goal when you try to get out. It's maybe in the 2000-2001 season, the year that 1860 qualified for the Champions League, and he scored a magnificent diving header. Just a wonderful goal, you know. When you know how short he is, and to see that kind of goal scored, it's just fantastic. So it was very hard leaving him out of that kind of formation.
Yeah, I know Thomas Hessler, definitely. He was a blonde-headed player.
Yeah.
Well, he like streaks of blonde in the same. I'm only trying to think back from memory, but he was short. He was one of the outstanding players at Euro 96, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. Yeah.
So, yeah, no, Thomas Hessler, definitely good choice.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and that's another one that you had to appreciate. You had to see him in the stadium. And, you know, I was very lucky that I got to see him on a regular basis while he was at 1860. Unfortunately, he was also part of the team that got relegated in 2003. He was actually, I think he's the only world champion to be on two teams that got relegated. Maybe we'll just omit that fact.
Yeah, we can forget that because... He had such a great international career, so we can just pretend the club stuff didn't happen.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's a world champion. I think that is something, you know, we have four generations of world champions in Germany. And for us, there is a saying that if you're a world champion, you're always right. So he's one of those four generations. So even though he got relegated twice, I guess he can't be wrong.
And what about your right-sided midfielder?
So there I'm going to go with Daniel Birovka.
Oh, jeez.
I know, I'm not going to make this easy, right? He's another 1860 player, but he's actually also played at Bayer Leverkusen and Stuttgart and won the championship with Stuttgart, actually. But he's an 1860 product, and his father was actually an 1860 product and an 1860 coach. And he was until recently was one of those players that really stood for that 1860 working class ethos. Really hardworking guy, but very technical, gifted guy as well. Very fast. So I had to put him in there. But another reason why I had to put him in there is because he's currently a coach for the 1860 second team in the fourth division, and he had to come up. He doesn't have a coaching license right now. He's working on that, but he had to come up two times in the last 2 years. to coach the first team and prevent them from going down into the third division, which of course would be basically the death knell for a team like 1860. He both times he managed it. You know, so not only was he an amazing player for the club, but he's also, as a coach, even though he doesn't have a coaching license, he's come up twice and put the coals out of the fire for a team that seemed very much dead. So, you know, it'd be hard to not include him in the list simply because of that.
You said Bierhoff.
Bierhoffka.
Oh, Bierhoffka. Sorry.
Daniel Bierhoffka.
I was hoping it was Bierhoff so I could ask you any relation to the main man, but obviously no. Not.
Although Oliver Bierhoff would be a good candidate for the attacking three. but he's not on it. Yeah, but he would be a good candidate. You know, he scored that goal in 1996 in England. Tournament that, of course, I remember quite fondly. There's actually another moment at that tournament. And, you know, that's a guy that I asked you guys before the pod if I could have a substitute. There's a guy that I want to put in simply for that 1996 tournament. That's Andy Möller.
Of course.
Yeah, Andy Möller.
Mick Jagger.
He would be a substitute. And the reason for that is, and this was, I was 12 during the 1996 European Championships. And then, you know, I remember all the headlines that came out from this big unnamed newspaper in England. It starts with an S and ends with an un. And, you know, making fun of Germany's Nazi past and all that kind of stuff. A real nasty shit.
Yeah.
The way the Germans were treated before that semi-final, it really stuck with me. I was really mad at England. And I think Andy Möller was too, because he scored that decisive penalty. He put it in the net and we beat England. It was such a satisfying feeling. And he stands in front of this crowd and he puts both his arms on his behind his back. And he just like builds himself in front of the England crowd. And he's like, I stuck it to you guys. And then I thought that was, you know, of course, you can say that's arrogant. But I think at that moment, it was kind of
like, Don't worry. We're Irish and Scottish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I just thought, like, wow, you know, that's a matter of confidence. He steps up there and he's like the booing, the cheering, all the shit that happened before the semifinal, and he just bang puts it in. And yeah, so you know, he would be one that was definitely on my short list. So when things are tough, I would throw Andy Möller in there because he'll make sure that you know we get it across the finishing line.
Well, I'm glad you added him because, again, it's nice to know some of the players you're actually talking about.
Yeah, I did say this would be a bit of a different approach because, you know, I support a team that isn't that well known around the world, and these are the players I grew up with, you know, so they have to be on the list.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Geez, don't get me wrong, man. It is interesting, and a few of them will be checked out. So carry on.
So should we start with the forward? Should I go with the one that you guys actually know, or should I name the other two first?
What do you reckon, Ali?
I say let's leave the one we'll know till last, just so we've got a bit of hot topic to end the conversation on.
All right, so I'll go maybe, this is another Austrian guy, Peter Pakult. Some of you might know him. You know, he had a prolific career in Austria, so our Austrian listeners will know. But he's also single-handedly brought 1860 to the first division in 1994, in the 1993-1994 division season, Bundesliga 2 season. And then later came actually back as a coach to coach the team between 2001 and 2003. So I had to put him in there. And he was actually my first favorite player as a kid, which is another good reason, you know, seeing 1860 coming back. I think at that time, it was 12-year abstinence from the first division. And, you know, him getting the team back up. And I remember when we won that final game, there was people were crying in the stands, you know, like, there's a lot of emotions involved with this. I don't know who you guys support, but, you know, if you are supporting a team that's currently in the second division or has gone through that promotion process, it is something that is very special, right? And for us, he was very special because he got us there. And he got us back there, and which was amazing.
Ali, have you ever supported a team that's been relegated?
Oh, I've not, no. And whilst I'm glad, but hearing like other fans and other pods from like the Championship in England getting promoted and just hear how they feel going through it all, it would be quite a fascinating encounter, albeit I never want to go through it because it would mean getting relegated, but it just seems such an exciting time that Whereas yeah, for me, being a Liverpool fan, we've kind of sat mid-table for the past 15 years. So it gets kind of, the season's kind of over by February, March, so it gets kind of boring at times.
But Manu, with the likes of 1860 Munich, reading up about them, they've some capacity stadium. It's massive.
It's not our stadium. It's owned by the Bayern Munich. We're supposed to get our own at some point soon. You know, if the investor, Hassan Ismaik, who's from Jordan, he promises that there will be a stadium. Apparently with a zoo that's going to be filled with lions, because 1860, they are also known as the Lions. So, and all the lions are going to have names of 1860 legends, some of we were talking about right now. So maybe we'll have our own stadium that actually is going to fit our capacity, because we get decent crowds in second division, between 20 and 30,000, which is pretty good for a team lingering in the bottom half of Bundesliga 2. And I remember last year doing the last match that determined that we actually stay in Bundesliga 2. We had 75,000 in the stadium, which is an enormous ride for a Bundesliga 2 side. Yeah, the stadium is too large.
Interesting. What about your second forward that we won't know about?
Martin Max. He's actually won the goal scoring title twice in the Bundesliga. Both times of 1860, great strike rate. He also played with Schalke, with Borussia Mönchengladbach and Hansa Rostock, back when Hansa Rostock were actually good. And he's played for Germany as well. So he is my number two choice, because he played for 1860 in 1999, 2003, which was that era where we almost became a big club in Germany. And then the wheels kind of came off. And instead, you know, we got they relegated and never really recovered from that. But, you know, he's that choice. Martin Max is my number two choice, simply because he reminds me of when times were good. And, you know, that's really what football is about. When times are not great, you know, we'll go nostalgic and we're thinking back of the games that gave us joy and, you know, brought us really positive memories of being in the stadium and, you know, we're celebrating victories.
No, I'll tell you, just to... Ali, I gave you one job to find out who the captain was, and I mean, have we reached that? Where's the captain, man?
He's coming last.
Oh, see, I knew you were playing with me. I
have faith in our guest to tell us his captain as he's naming it.
So you want to know who my captain is?
No, let us guess. give Ali some clues.
Okay, German national team player, World Cup winner, German national team coach.
Oh, Klinsmann?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, that was my guess as well, Gav.
Played, comes from 1860s. I was an former 1860 player. Comes from the youth academy. 1860 youth academy, but 1860 Hanau, not 1860 Munich. Still works in football. Grey hair.
Oh, shit. Watch, see, I've no computer in front of me. Ali's gone nuts there and Google he is. I know he is.
No, I've not got a computer. I'm on my phone as well, Gav, so I'm stumped.
Oh, do you know what? I can see him. I can actually see him.
He's won the Champions League.
Heynckes?
No. He won the Champions League with Olympique Marseille. He's a teammate of RBD Pelé at the time.
German.
Hmm.
And he won the World Cup.
He won the World Cup.
In 1990.
1990.
Bremer.
No.
Oh, hold on. He would have been a forward at that time.
Forward, yeah. Prolific forward too. Scored 47 goals in 90 national team games.
Rudi Voller.
Ah, yes.
Well done, Ali.
Well
it
done.
It was the Marseille bit that gave it away.
Yeah. Rudi Voller. He actually did, he holds the record for you know, the most goals scored in the Bundesliga 2 for 1860. And actually in general, I think he scored 40 goals in one season in Bundesliga 2. And that led to a prolific career. He went to Werder Bremen next, scored 97 goals in 137 games. Then Roma, you know, where he's still a legend today. You know, he actually went back to Roma at some point to coach there. Olympique Marseille, 24 goals in 58 games. Bayer Leverkusen, 26 goals in 62 games. You know, wherever he went, he scored a lot of goals. And he was actually my favorite player growing up, even though he was no longer at 1860, and I actually never saw him play at 1860. So he's the only one on the list who's played for 1860, but I've actually never seen play for 1860. Mostly because my dad always said, like, oh, we had Rudi Völler at one point, you know, and he was so, so prolific and such a good player. And there was actually talk in the 1990s that he would come back. Sadly, he didn't. But, you know, he was just something else. Very talented. And I mean, whenever you have a player who wins the World Cup, it's just a different category, isn't it? You're talking about automatically about a legend. And 1990, of course, is also when he had that the fight with Frank Rijkaard.
Manu, that's when you mentioned Rudi Völler came into my head, 1990. That's what I remember, because he was suspended then for the next game,
which was such a shame. I mean, it's you know, the injustice of it, because it was Frank Rijkaard who spit into Völler's hair, right? And when you go online, I mean, he doesn't have very much hair left these days. It's all like white and silvery, and he looks a little bit like that, like the guy from Hogwarts. What's his name? The head honcho there. So you know, it's all gone. But back then, he has like this voluptuous, like the curly hair there, which was in the late '80s, early '90s. Looks a little bit, you know, like Vukuila, you know, the long hair in the back and the short hair in the front. So go online and check it out. I don't think he even felt the spit until it's, you know, 5 minutes later, because his hair was so thick. That tournament too, he was amazing. You know, he was a big part of why Germany won the World Cup. I think it was him who was brought down in the penalty box against Argentina in the final. And, you know, the penalty led to the World Cup victory. You know, for
that Bremer scored.
Yeah, that's right. Andy Bremer, he scored the winning penalty. Who would have also, Andy Bremer would actually have been a good choice for the squad as well, because, you know, he's another very good defender guy I grew up with early on. There was a few players where I was like, oh, I should include them, but I wanted to make it a little bit trickier for you guys. And I tried to get players that all had 1860 connection. So, you know, Rudi Völler was one that needed to be in there. And he's my captain, simply because of all the success he had.
Yeah, he was a special player as well. You're not denying that. Is he still involved with Bayer Leverkusen, Manu?
Yeah, he's the sporting director, or the actual CEO now, I think. So he's, you know, he more or less runs the club, because the club is owned by the pharmaceutical company Bayer, right? But he's, I think, the head of sport at the club. So he's the decision maker. And, you know, we all know that Bayer Leverkusen is one of the better teams in Germany, even though they've been struggling this year. But, you know, he's been there since 2005. And in the last 11 years has really built a club that, you know, is one of the stronger teams in Germany.
Yeah, solid foundations there, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's mostly down to him. You know, he's a smart networker. He knows how to hold connections, and he's, you know, he has a good eye for bringing in talented players.
It seems to be a lot of what the German clubs do well is keeping the top players involved in the clubs that have the football and background. You know, there's not many clubs around the world that do it and do it well, but there seems to be quite a lot in Germany that do it, and it's good to see. And
yeah, and I think that's key. I mean, I am an 1860 fan, but I look, you know, just across the street, because Bayern Munich isn't far from the training. Bayern Munich's training ground isn't far from 1860's training ground. And when it comes to running a team, I think no team in the world is better run than Bayern Munich.
No,
that's because they have all the important actors. You know, the president, the team, the head sporting director, all of them. You know, the head of the board. They're all former players. Yes, they get to involve like outsiders as well, right? From business ends, etc. But they have really managed to keep the know-how of the club and the philosophy of winning, you know, because they have a philosophy of winning to keep that in the team. I think they did a very good job. And I know Philipp Lahm is supposed to become the next sporting director, which is a brilliant move, right? You know, a player that has won so many different games and so many titles, etc., to keep in kind of in there, to keep that corporate know-how going, right? It's very smart. The succession plans are there. And I think that is something that a lot of teams don't do around the world. They can, of course, do it because they don't have an owner, right? It's a membership-based club, mm-hmm. so they can do it that way, which speaks for itself. I personally am a big believer of membership clubs because I think that everything is focused on football, not on business. Mm-hmm. And I think they do that really well. So, you know, Bayer Leverkusen, I think they were really smart. Or the Bayer, the pharmaceutical company, they're very hands-off. They basically just sponsor the team and Rudi Völler runs it. And they're very good as well in keeping former players involved. And you see that Borussia Dortmund too, right? Michael Zorc is a former player and he's now the sporting director, making all the decisions. And I think that's it's always smart when you go down that road.
Yeah, there's no doubt in current times that the Bundesliga and all its teams, if I'm not mistaken, there is a law in place that no corporate entity can own more than 49%, which always keeps the clubs basically in the hands of its members.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's a couple exceptions. We named one Bayer Leverkusen, the other one is Wolfsburg, because these teams were founded as corporate teams all the way back. So they were sort of grandfathered in. And then there's the new exception is RB Leipzig. Although RB Leipzig is officially not owned by Red Bull. They are a membership club, but they just made sure that membership fees are so high that only people employed by Red Bull can become members, right? So they kind of circumnavigated the rules a little bit there. Which is, of course, one of the big criticisms against them. And the other exception is actually my club, 1860, where they found a way to sell 49% of their shares because they're a multi-sport team. So they just sold 49% of the shares, but gave away 60% of the voting rights of the soccer part of the multi-sport club, right? Which is a way to get around. And that's why we can't call Ismaik the owner, even though he kind of is. He's the investor, right? Because he invested in the club and he's a minority holder in the club, but he's a majority holder of the football part of the club, which a lot of people have also criticized because they call it circumnavigating of the rules. But that's an entire different story. I think we have one of the Bundesliga podcasts, the Gegenpressing podcast that we do. We explain it quite well and the rules and everything around it. So for the listeners that are interested in it, go and check out our Gegenpressing podcast because we have a special one for it.
Well, Manu, I'm going to test you here now on your love of TSV 1860. You've got 5 seconds to answer this.
All right.
How many times in the last 6 games have they lost? 5. 4. 3.
Too many times.
No, they actually haven't lost a game in the last 6 matches. Believe it or believe
not. That's right. Yeah, we changed coaches. We actually had Bierowka come in as an interim. Things started looking up a little bit, but results still haven't been great. Also, it's not true. We lost to Bochum.
Oh, no, hold on. No. You lost 3-1 to Dusseldorf, and then after that, you've gone on that team that I can't pronounce. You beat Ingolstadt. You drew it Kaiserslautern, beat Dynamo Dresden, drew it Heidenheim, and you drew it Setebal in a friendly. So, yeah.
I think you're looking at the schedule the wrong way around.
No, yeah, sorry.
He's definitely wrong, man. On the fixtures that I've got, they've lost twice in the last 4 games.
Yeah, that's what I remember. it'd be a nice statistic if you... I wish
sorry,
you were.
Manny, you didn't hear me. Sorry, you weren't listening. Question was, in the last 6 home games.
Oh, yes, you're right, in the last 6 home games. Okay, well...
No, you're right. Actually, I was looking online. You're right. You got Bochum Beaches 1-0, and you've lost twice in the last 6 games. Mm, so,
yeah.
How do you see a season panning out? Is it actually perilously close to relegation there at the moment? In a fairly competitive league at the moment, looking at the points out.
Well, the investor said that he's going to invest between 50 and 100 million euros the next year. We signed a coach, Vitor Pereira, from he was with Fenerbahce in Porto before. We're apparently giving him 3 million euros a year. So that's he has a coach with a huge pedigree. We signed a new defender today who's played with Porto and Fenerbahce as well. So usually a signing that we wouldn't get. Before the season started, we spent 6 million euros on new players, which in Bundesliga 2 terms is a lot of money. So, you know, the talent is there. But you're absolutely right. It is close. I think it's just 3 points off the drop zone, which isn't great. At the same time, you win 5 or 6 games. You know, when you look at the table, everything is very close. You can go up quite fast. The key is, of course, you need to get those results. You need to get them fast. And that's really what matters. You know, the season, the second half of the season starts next week, January 27th. We're playing against Fürth. And Fürth is a local rival. So that's going to be a very, very important game. And there's going to be a large attendance for this game. Because, you know, a lot of people will be coming because they want to see the new coach. They want to see the new players. People coming from the other team, from Fürth, because that's only an hour's drive away. So I expect there will be 45,000 people in the stands, which is huge, right? And that's going to put a lot of pressure on it right away. And that will set the tone, I believe, for the second half of the season. You know, if they win this game, then things will look up far quickly. But then if they don't, the pressure will be really hard and the pressure will be with them for the rest of the season. And that's, I think, that's going to be the important one. They win the local derby. That's a good way to kick off, right? Second half of the season.
Yeah, definitely. It sets up for a good run that way, doesn't it? A good start for the coach. Fans on their back in a positive way. As you say, looking at the table so tight, a few wins and you're right back up there. But one loss and then you're right in the mix. So it's a massive game coming up, definitely.
Yeah, it's definitely a big one. I mean, I'll be definitely watching it. You know, it's a very 1860 is a very emotional club, just because it's the downtown team. Bayern Munich is more the team of the province of Bavaria, right? And they carry the name of the province, of course, in the name. 1860 is the downtown from Giesing, and Giesing is the center of the city. If any one of you have ever been to Munich, you know Munich, the heart of the city, and this is where, you know, the working class always lived, where a lot of the factories used to be, where the beer breweries were too, you know, or still are today. It's of course, it makes for a very different kind of fan relationship, right? So I always when people ask me, like, what is 1860 comparable to? It's from an emotional standpoint. It's what's an equivalent? Maybe Liverpool, even in England. You know, like, the everything is very good or everything is very bad. You know, there's no in between. People have a hard time differentiating. So when they win this game, everything will be very good, and you can carry this wave of euphoria. If they lose this game, then, you know, everything is going to be doom and gloom, and that's makes this game very important.
Yeah, it's a good comparison. That's exactly how it feels in our fan base a lot of the time just now. So I'm on your side there.
Well, I'm personally feeling all the 1860 Munich love. Oh, Jesus. Which means I have to kind of watch them now for the next couple of weeks. but before we go, what I'm going to do is, Manu, I'm actually going to name out the squad you've given me. And correct me if I get any of the names wrong. See, our goalkeeper, Oliver Kahn, obviously. Defender, Thomas Miller. Defender, Bernard Dries.
Dradis.
Defender, Harold Chaney.
Yep.
Yeah, look at that. See that, Ali?
I'm proud of you, Gavin. I'm proud of you. You've come a long way.
I tell you. Left side of the midfield, Pato Novak.
Piotr.
Pato.
Piotr.
Midfield, Abby Pele.
Abby D. Yeah.
Midfield, Thomas Hassler. Of course it is.
Yeah, close enough.
Sorry, Thomas Hassler.
Yeah, better.
Daniel. Not Bierhoff. What's your man's name?
Birovka. They're perfect.
Oh, tell you. Forward, Peter. Palakuk.
Pakult.
Jesus Christ. Ali, you're going to have to check all these boys out on YouTube, if they are on YouTube. Or VHS, if you can find them.
I think I need the old Betamax, never mind VHS.
Martin Marks. Obviously, too easy. And, of course, Rudy Völler.
Yeah.
The captain. But have you any honourable mentions, Manu? Like,
Andy Möller. Daniel Bierhoff. Bierhoff, of course. You know, Oliver Bierhoff, not Daniel. Oliver Bierhoff. The goal he scored to win us the European Championships. Honourable mentions. I was thinking of Jürgen Kohler for defense. You know, both former Borussia Dortmund great, also a World Cup winner, 1990 World Cup winner. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
So many World Cup winners to pick from. So unfair.
Yeah, yeah, we got four of them, right? We got four World Cup winning teams. You know, that's what the stars are for, on top of the crest. So when you look down as an England supporter and you only see one, just remember that.
he's a Scottish supporter. He's not a star, is.
Well, so you have none. No, that's even worse.
we don't even qualify.
Well, now they're expanding the tournament to 48.
Yeah,
they still won't qualify.
If they expand it to 120, we might have a chance.
Keep reminding me, did you go to the European Championships? Because it seemed like everyone else did.
Yeah, no, we didn't.
Manu, if they hosted the World Cup, they still wouldn't qualify.
Yeah, I've not even got a comeback. There's no point.
Well, look, that's a great laugh.
I feel like 24, you know, that means everyone in Europe is allowed to go. So, you know, there's hope.
No, no. My hope for seeing Scotland in the tournament died when they lost to Brazil in the last one they were in. That's it. We're done.
Well, look, Manu, that was brilliant. Thanks very much for coming on.
Loved it.
It's been interesting, to say the least. Again, I just, you know, hand over to me co-host who's going to give it a load rundown as to what he's going to do with that team. What are you going to do, Ali?
There's a lot of homework to be done there. But I'm definitely going to check some of them out. I'm going to keep an eye on Munich more, because that's a decent crowd you get. I didn't know you were in Bundesliga 2. And to get that level of crowd, I'm going to keep an eye on them from now on, see what we're missing.
Well, hopefully you're going to miss. I mean, you know, you haven't missed a lot in the last 4 years, so... hopefully things are improving. It can only get better.
That's it. Can't get any worse if you're saying it's been that bad. So hopefully you got a good result in your little rival game coming up. So let's see where that goes.
Well, anyway, lads, we'll leave it at that. Next week, we'll have another guest. Ali, Pinky, Debbie, Alfred, say goodbye.
Goodbye, Gavin. Goodbye, Manu. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, guys. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, cheers, Manu. Manu, tell the lads where you can be found, because you should be followed.
Yeah, so you can find my personal Twitter account at Homo Sovieticus. Of course, you know, I have a couple pods to plug as well on the WFI, the Football Grad podcast, which I believe is quite popular. And then the Gegenpressing Bundesliga podcast. And of course, the Bundesliga kicked off today in spectacular fashion. So we'll be on Monday, will be our first pod, regular match day pod coming out. So take a look out for that. And then you can go and find my writing is on footballgrad.com and on fußballstadt.com for anything German related.
And if you just want to know how to pronounce any of the names, just send them a direct message, because we're struggling.
that articulateness is gone already, Gav. Second pod in, that's it.
I know, we have to dumb it down for next week. I wonder who we have next week. Well, anyway, lads, look, thanks for coming on. It's been, look, it's a laugh. It's nice to hear another fan's history with our club, the players that have enlightened their lives growing up. It's, who are we to be opinionated towards it? We can only listen, and we can find out for ourselves. So it's a good boy from me. It's a good boy from Manu. And it's a good boy from your man.
Your man. Goodbye.
Good luck.